Welcome to Historical Nerdery, the show that destroys the myths of the American Revolution, one podcast at a time. I am your head nerd, Alexander Kane. In today's episode, we're going to visit the high seas and explore the role Massachusetts privateers played in driving the British Army out of Boston in 1776. I hope you will join us today on Historical Nerdery. Let's get into the show. Following the battles of Lexington and Concord, the Massachusetts Committee of Safety quickly recognized that in order to drive the British Army from the town, it had to starve them out. The British military had a long-standing practice of acquiring fresh provisions from local farmers. At first, General Thomas Gage contemplated purchasing supplies from the American farmers who lived on the islands in Boston Harbor. Unfortunately, many of the yeomen were reluctant to cooperate. As a result, the general decided he would initiate a military operation and forcefully seize these necessary resources. Of course, the Harbor Islands only provided a limited amount of supplies. American commanders found themselves unprepared to respond to these foraging operations. Initially, the Massachusetts Committee of Safety proposed that all the livestock be taken from Noodles Island, Hog Island, and Snake Island, and from that part of Chelsea near the coast. However, the committee failed to secure troops from nearby communities to carry out these instructions. Gage took advantage of the American confusion and continued to send out foraging parties. On May 21st, he enlisted the support of Vice Admiral Samuel Graves and dispatched an armed schooner, two sloops, and a detachment of 100 troops to Grape Island. The island, incorporated within the town of Hingham, Massachusetts, was owned by Elijah Levitt, a wealthy loyalist who had previously offered or sold supplies to Gage. The vessel's approach to the island alarmed the neighboring towns. General John Thomas, the American commander of the provincial militia at Roxbury, sent three companies to a point of land across from Grape Island. The militiamen opened fire on the island, but, given the range, had little effect beyond drawing a response from the ship's cannons. Eventually, the regulars had escaped, taking with them what they could. In response, the militiamen rowed over to Grapes Island, torched Levitt's barn, and then they seized the remaining livestock. Provincial leaders scrambled to find a way to prevent further such raids and stop the flow of supplies into Boston. Major General Artemus Ward, Commander-in-Chief of the Army surrounding Boston, convened a council of war to discuss removing or destroying all supplies on Noodles and Hog Islands. From this meeting, a plan would be formulated regarding the removal of resources from some of the nearby Boston Harbor Islands. The end result of the plan would be the Battle of Chelsea Creek, which we will discuss in a future episode. As a result of these land interdiction efforts by the American Army, Gage was forced to rely heavily upon the long and tenuous communication and supply lines to British possessions in Nova Scotia and the West Indies, and ultimately back to England. The Massachusetts Committee of Safety saw this logistical nightmare as an opportunity to loosen Gage's hold on Boston. Massachusetts had a long history of privateering during the previous French Wars and almost immediately turned to the practice as a method to drive His Majesty's troops out of town. Privateering, or lawful piracy, was the act of seizing enemy supply or military vessels by civilian-owned warships. Privateers operated under the color of letters of marque issued from governmental authorities and were often, if not solely, motivated by the opportunity for profit. The objective of privateering was to capture prizes and sell the vessels and cargo for profit to the ship's owner, her officers, and crew. Massachusetts authorities actively encouraged just about any person with a seaworthy vessel to partake in privateer operations and placed no limits on the number of ships receiving letters of marque. According to a November 1775 resolution, Massachusetts privateers were authorized to equip any vessel to sail on the seas, attack, take, and bring into port in this colony all vessels offending or employed by the enemy. For both privateers as well as the Continental Navy, the financial appeal of the war influenced a sailor's decision about joining the war. A major concern for men determined how they would contribute to the war effort and how they would be financially compensated for their contributions while away from their homes. Agreeing to fight against British rule was more than a patriotic decision, as this commitment influenced a sailor's ability to earn a living from his pre-war occupation. Men who wanted to become sailors during the late 1770s faced two primary options: either join the newly formed Continental Navy, or join a privateering vessel commissioned by the Continental Congress, or more commonly, by state governments. While the salary promised to the sailors by the Continental Congress was a reliable source of income, the potential to make great deals of money through privateering was a much more attractive prospect to many. Sailors in the Continental Navy typically received a salary of $5, and the officers and seamen split one-third of the prizes from ships they seized. As historian James Volo explains, in most cases, simple economic self-interest spurred these patriots to serve by the hundreds in private warships from 1775 to 1783. So popular was privateering that the regular Navy had trouble recruiting and keeping crews. This overwhelming trend towards privateering instead of enlisting in the Continental Navy suggests financial motives strongly outweighed the desire to fight with the Continental forces. Besides profit, why else did Americans choose to serve aboard privateers? Certainly, it was not out of any belief they could defeat the Royal Navy. For nearly a century, even the mightiest navies had found that the British were a more than worthy adversary upon the sea. Privateers, typically sloops and schooners, held little hope of survival against a British ship of the line, much less the ability to overcome one. A privateer's best chance of survival in battle was to prey on weaker vessels, strike fast and with the element of surprise, and flee if it came within operational range of a stronger vessel. Thus, privateering was, at best, an extremely dangerous enterprise to undertake. So there must have been a number of advantages to serving aboard a privateer that were not inherent in professional military service. Furthermore, such benefits must have been considerable for privateering to have so outweighed the effectiveness of the Continental Navy. Like the militias in which soldiers fought with people they knew and chose their own officers, privateers could often offer a more desirable life than was typical in the Army or the Navy. Basing their knowledge of military life on the British system, potential soldiers knew that enlistment in a professional military outfit required a lengthy commitment, and enlistees were subject to often strict military regulations. Punitive practices in the military were harsh and often cruel, particularly for desertion. Military pay for both classes was meager at best, and often non-existent. While some of this attitude carried over into the American military, the low pay rates for soldiers in the colonies was much more a reflection of a lack of resources and the notion that service was not a career so much as a necessity for the survival of the colony. In the Navy, when one factored in the depressing and dangerous life aboard an 18th century vessel, military life must have seemed little better than imprisonment. Privateers could not necessarily claim to offer any less miserable working conditions than the Navy, but certain aspects of service aboard a privateer could appeal to potential volunteers. Owners designed newspaper ads to entice men to sail with privateers, promising them a prosperous, patriotic, and even an enjoyable cruise. One such ad even emphasized the ability of alcohol to seamen aboard the privateer. Americans quickly recognized the perks of private naval action. As a result, within a very short time, Gage's Atlantic supply lines fell prey to the privateer fleets of Newburyport, Salem, Beverly, and Plymouth, Massachusetts. According to reports from the Essex Gazette, Massachusetts privateers were far more successful in cutting off British supplies than their land-based counterparts. As early as September 9, 1775, the newspaper reported that last Saturday, a privateer belonging to Newburyport carried into Portsmouth, New Hampshire, a schooner of 45 tons loaded with potatoes and turnips intended for the enemy in Boston. Many of these privateers traveled in groups that varied in size from a few ships to over 20. One such squadron from Newburyport consisted of 25 vessels and over 2,800 men. A second from the same town boasted 30 vessels. Perhaps one of the most successful American supply interdictions during the Siege of Boston occurred on November 25, 1775, when the Lee, a privateer under the command of Captain John Manley of Marblehead, captured the British vessel Nancy. According to a December 7, 1775 newspaper description, Captain Manley, in the Lee, a vessel of war, in the service of the United Colonies, carried into Cape Ann a large brig called the Nancy, which he took off that place, bound from London to Boston, laden with about 350 cauldrons of coal, and a quantity of bale goods taken by Captain Manley was carried into Salem. She is about 200 tons burthen and is almost a new ship. Of course, what was not reported initially was that the Nancy was a military ordnance vessel from Woolwich, England, that carried no less than 2,000 muskets, 31 tons of musket shot, 30,000 round shot of various sizes, 100,000 musket flints, 11 mortar beds, and a 2,700-pound, 13-inch mortar base. A few weeks after the capture of the Nancy, the Essex Gazette announced Captain Manley had struck again. Captain Manley has, within a few days past, taken another valuable prize, a sloop from Virginia bound for Boston, loaded with corn and oats, fitted out and sent by Lord Dunmore. Towards the close of 1775, Massachusetts privateers were not only preventing much-needed supplies from reaching Boston, but were also seizing enemy vessels in rapid succession. According to one New England newspaper report, several vessels loaded with fuel, provisions of various kinds, etc., bound to Boston, have been carried into Salem and Beverly within a few days past. By mid-December, reports of successful captures by Massachusetts privateers were pouring into the colonies. As Benjamin Hitchborn noted to John Adams, "Our privateers have made so many captures that it is impossible for me to be particular." Likewise, James Warren, president of the Massachusetts Provincial Congress, wrote about the success of privateers against British supply lines. "Several prizes have been taken in the week past, and among the rest a fine ship from London, with coal, porter cheese, live hogs, etc., etc., and a large brig from Antigua with rum and sugar, etc." The activities of the Massachusetts privateers did not go unnoticed by British military officials. The spy, Benjamin Church, warned General Gage that unless some plan of accommodation takes place immediately, their harbors will swarm with privateers. Major General William Howe of the British Army openly complained about the interdiction efforts when he stated, "I am also concerned to observe the uncertainty of defenseless vessels getting into this harbor is rendered more and more precarious by the rebel privateers infesting the bay, who can take advantage of many inlets on the coast where His Majesty's ships cannot pursue them, and from whence they can safely avail themselves of any opportunities that offer." Similarly, Admiral Graves wrote about the difficulty of protecting vital supply lines. "Notwithstanding the utmost endeavors of the cruisers to protect vessels arriving with supplies, the rebels watch the opportunity of the king's ships and vessels being off the coast, slip out in light good-going vessels full of men, seize a defenseless merchant ship, and push immediately for the nearest port the wind will carry them to." Eventually, the Commodore who oversaw the Royal Navy's North American station during the outset of the American War for Independence was forced to concede the early success of the Massachusetts privateers. As he reported to British officials, "I am sorry to inform their lordships that I have it from pretty good authority that the rebels have many armed vessels. I have great reason to believe their orders are to interrupt the trade of this country by preventing them from sending lumber and other necessaries to the West Indies or Great Britain, and particularly to stop all supplies for Boston." Even as the British Army was preparing to evacuate Boston, Massachusetts privateers were still harassing Crown shipping lanes. On March 6, 1776, the Yankee Hero sent into Newburyport another prize, a fine brig of about 200 tons burthen, laden with coal, cheese, etc., and bound for Whitehaven, for the use of the ministerial butchers under the command of General Howe, governor of Boston. This is the fifth prize out of eight which sailed state from the above port. A little over a week later, Massachusetts sailors successfully intercepted a pair of vessels that carried artillery, ammunition, food, and necessary medical supplies. According to the newspaper report, on March 14, 1776, a transport brig of 16 guns, laden with naval stores and provisions, bound from Boston for the ministerial fleet at the southward, was taken. A ship of 240 tons, also captured by Captain Manley about this time, was shipped with six double-fortified four-pounders, two swivels, and three barrels of powder, while the cargo consisted of 175 butts of porter, 12 packages of medicine, and large quantities of coal, sauerkraut, etc., besides a great number of packages for the officers in Boston. She also brought out 60 live hogs, but only one of them was alive when she was carried in. According to historian George Clark, over a period of 5 months between November 1775 and March of 1776, the number of British vessels captured en route to Boston amounted to 31, their tonnage to 3,045 tons. A similar study conducted by James Richard Wills revealed that New England privateers seized 1,575,000 pounds worth of ships and supplies during the first 2 years of the war. The introduction of privateering had the desired result. The British encountered increasingly difficulty in provisioning its army in Boston. Moreover, with the capture of supply vessels destined for the British garrison, the Americans gained muskets, ammunition, and provisions for themselves, affording them the potential ability to launch a land assault on the city. Worse still for the British, the soldiers and the people in Boston began to starve. Both General Washington and rebel authorities recognized the important contributions of privateers towards the war effort. Less than 1 week after the evacuation of Boston by the British Army, the Continental Congress passed the Privateer Act of 1776. In response, Massachusetts privateers, as well as those from other colonies, expanded their wartime operation. According to the National Park Service, approximately 800 vessels were commissioned as privateers throughout the American colonies during the American Revolution. These ships were responsible for capturing or destroying over 600 British ships and inflicting approximately $18 million in damage, which translates to approximately $300 million in 2021. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Historical Nerdery. To learn more about Massachusetts privateers, as well as other neat information about revolutionary New England, be sure to check out my website, historicalnerdery.com, follow me on Facebook and Instagram, and subscribe to my mailing list. I'm Alex Kane, and this has been Historical Nerdery.